The Seven Dials Mystery by Agatha Christie, read by Amelia Fox. Chapter 1. On Early Rising. That amiable youth, Jimmy Thesiger, came racing down the big staircase at Chimney's two steps at a time. So precipitate was his descent that he collided with Treadwell, the stately butler, just as the latter was crossing the hall bearing a fresh supply of hot coffee. Owing to the marvellous presence of mind and masterly agility of Treadwell, no casualty occurred.
"Sorry," apologised Jimmy. "I say, Treadwell, am I the last down?"
"No, sir. Mr. Wade has not come down yet."
"Good," said Jimmy, and entered the breakfast room.
The room was empty save for his hostess, and her reproachful gaze gave Jimmy the same feeling of discomfort he always experienced on catching the eye of a defunct codfish exposed on a fisherman's slab.
Yet, hang it all, why should the woman look at him like that? To come down at a punctual 9:30 when staying in a country house simply wasn't done. To be sure, it was now 11:15, which was, perhaps, the outside limit, but even then...
"Afraid I'm a bit late, Lady Coote. What?"
"Oh, it doesn't matter," said Lady Coote in a melancholy voice. As a matter of fact, people being late for breakfast worried her very much. For the first 10 years of her married life, Sir Oswald Coote, then plain mister, had, to put it badly, raised hell if his morning meal were even half a minute later than 8 o'clock. Lady Coote had been disciplined to regard unpunctuality as a deadly sin of the most unpardonable nature. And habit dies hard. Also, she was an earnest woman, and she could not help asking herself what possible good these young people would ever do in the world without early rising. As Sir Oswald so often said to reporters and others,
"I attribute my success entirely to my habits of early rising, frugal living and methodical habits."
Lady Coote was a big, handsome woman in a tragic sort of fashion. She had large, mournful eyes and a deep voice. An artist looking for a model for Rachel mourning for her children would have hailed Lady Coote with delight. She would have done well, too, in melodrama, staggering through the falling snow as the deeply wronged wife of the villain. She looked as though she had some terrible secret sorrow in her life, and yet, if the truth be told, Lady Coote had had no trouble in her life whatever, except the meteoric rise to prosperity of Sir Oswald. As a young girl, she had been a jolly flamboyant creature, very much in love with Oswald Coote, the aspiring young man in the bicycle shop next to her father's hardware store. They had lived very happily, first in a couple of rooms, and then in a tiny house, and then in a larger house, and then in successive houses of increasing magnitude, but always within a reasonable distance of the works. Until now, Sir Oswald had reached such an eminence that he and the works were no longer interdependent, and it was his pleasure to rent the very largest and most magnificent mansions available all over England. Chimney's was a historic place, and in renting it from the Marquis of Caterham for 2 years, Sir Oswald felt that he had attained the top notch of his ambition. Lady Coote was not nearly so happy about it. She was a lonely woman. The principal relaxation of her early married life had been talking to the girl, and even when the girl had been multiplied by 3, conversation with her domestic staff had still been the principal distraction of Lady Coote's day. Now, with a pack of housemaids, a butler like an archbishop, several footmen of imposing proportions, a bevy of scuttling kitchen and scullery maids, a terrifying foreign chef with a temperament, and a housekeeper of immense proportions who alternately creaked and rustled when she moved, Lady Coote was as one marooned on a desert island. She sighed now, heavily, and drifted out through the open window, much to the relief of Jimmy Thesiger, who at once helped himself to more kidneys and bacon on the strength of it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?